back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are about to go through round three with all of our mayoral candidates, and of course the election on June 2nd. Want to give a shout out here on Baltimore Positive, not only to my Kemosabian partner and former Baltimore County Executive Don Mulder, but that great institution of dining up the street from him at State Fair, where he has been able to stop by and get some chicken wings and some shrimp and grits. I haven't been given that opportunity, but at some point I'll get some chicken and waffles before it's all over with. Don has also partaken in Fadley's, where you can ship, and I did ship, had some crab cake shipped to my friend in Little Rock, Arkansas a couple weeks ago from down at Fadley's, enjoying the taste of Maryland anywhere you are. You can do that at Fadley's. You can also pick up curbside as well. And, of course, Mueller Gary Realty still selling homes, still closing deals, showing homes online, closing deals online, 6 feet away in a mask and getting great service and great real estate. And my friend, Jeff Mueller, you can hear out in the buy at Toyota.com audio vault. Don, we've had plenty of oxygen here. I know you worked very, very hard at putting a day together on April 14th. We were going to have all of the mayor candidates join us all at once. Obviously, COVID changed that, as well as the length of my hair and yours as well. But we have been blessed to have all of them now join us for really sort of an extended period of time. I know we're looking forward to this one as well.
We really are, and the goal is we invite our next guest, Mary Miller, former Obama official, as well as former T. Rowe Price executive, running for mayor, first time running for public office. And Mary, we welcome you aboard Baltimore Positive for the third time.
Thank you so much to both of you. It's great to be here.
Great to have you back. Let's start. I was joking with Nestor in the last couple of days, Mary. I said, all of a sudden, when the news articles begin to shift and I see a number of candidates suddenly begin to take aim at someone, it usually says to me that someone has momentum. And in this case, it appears to be you. So I'm assuming you feel pretty good about the direction of your campaign at this point.
Well, we're very heartened by the traction we seem to have gotten. As you recall, I jumped into this race in January with very low name recognition and no, you know, background as an elected official. And so the fact that we've come this far, this fast, is exciting. And the poll that came out on Friday suggested that I was tied with two other candidates, Sheila Dixon and Brandon Scott, and that was consistent with some internal polling that we'd done ourselves. So we're feeling good about that. We also realize there's only 4 weeks from today to June 2nd, and voters are going to start getting ballots as early as next week, so, you know, the race is on. You know, we are in a full court sprint to the finish line here.
How's COVID changed all this, you know, over 8 weeks and obviously 6 weeks since we got together? It feels like 6 months. My hair certainly feels that way. But for mail-in ballots, I've now done that, right? Like, I've now filled in. I live in the 7th. I had to do it a couple of weeks ago. I know the president doesn't want that. And certain sides of, you know, and parties don't want that. But that's going to be a part of this in a way that maybe didn't envision back at the end of 19 when you started to think about, I'm going to run for mayor.
Well, I certainly didn't anticipate mail-in balloting, but no one anticipated the depth and severity of the COVID-19 crisis either. I mean, we have no alternative than to do a mail-in ballot for this election, so that's what we're going to do. It is new. People haven't done this before. I guess you've done it in the 7th District, but, you know, we're doing as much as we can to educate voters about this, and I think everyone has a part to do here. But it is the case that you need to make sure that your voter registration address is the same as where you're living now. And most people don't think about that, to reach out and check their registered address with the State Board of Elections, but that's important to make sure the ballot's coming to you. And then I think people just need to understand, you know, the process, where they need to sign, when they need to get it back. If they don't get a ballot, what are their alternatives? You know, if you have a disability, there will be 4 sites in the city on June 2nd where you can vote in person. So we just need to keep hammering home these messages and making sure people are paying attention. There was not very high participation in the 7th District election for Congress, and probably a host of reasons why, but we want to see strong participation in this upcoming primary.
Well, Mary, in talking about polls and your position and the fact that you began with zero name recognition and now in at least one of the latest polls are in a dead heat, for the lead in this race. Let me give you an opportunity to respond to a couple of the things that are being said now by supporters of other candidates in the race regarding your candidacy. One is, and this is not a new one, this is certainly one that Martin O'Malley faced back when he ran against Lawrence Bell and Carl Stokes. There was a question whether a young upstart white councilman could be the mayor for Baltimore City, that an African-American majority city. So some are raising the issue again, whether or not Baltimore City can be led by a white woman. What do you say to folks who raise that issue? I'm sure you've heard it.
Well, I don't think Baltimore City has ever been led by a white woman, so it will be new. But I just say, I think the voters have got to look past race and say, who is the best qualified candidate to lead at this time? And we know what Baltimore City's issues are. Crime is number one. Our education system, our housing issues, you know, our transportation system, our public health issues. We know the issues, but I think the coronavirus has laid bare these issues even further, and now we have an economic crisis on top of this because the economy is contracting very hard here. So I think you need someone who's got the background in economic recovery, in managing budgets, in making financial decisions, and helping steer the city through this, because we've got a host of challenges here. The next mayor will face a daunting job. So what I say to people is, let's look at the backgrounds, the experience, and the skills of the people that have put their names in the race here, and let's figure out who's got the best qualities, and let's not make this all about race.
I want to ask a Deputy Secretary of the Treasury type of question. Where's all this money coming from? I mean, you know, giving people like me and small business owners forgivable loans, and banks are writing down 6 months of this, and $1,200 came for me. And the, you know, like, where's all that? And at what point does our money become far less valuable if we're printing more of it?
Well, I think the federal government is pulling out all the stops here. I was, you know, worried when I was at the Treasury that we were running trillion-dollar deficits. That number could be double this year. This is unprecedented in terms of the fiscal stimulus and stabilization measures that the federal government is taking. I would say that this downturn is sharper, faster, and deeper than what we saw even in the financial crisis, which unfolded over a few years, not over a few weeks. So the response has been unbelievable in terms of the scale of it, and there may be more to come. But it's certainly not good for the fiscal health of the federal government. They're playing, you know, the role of, you know, big, you know, stabilization programs to help people across the country, because this is very broad in terms of the way it's hitting all parts of the economy. It will not be good for the federal deficit. It won't be good for the bond sizes of what we'll be borrowing at the federal level to pay for all this.
Well, we'll jump back to the campaign in a little bit, but since we're talking about COVID and economics and fiscal crisis, let's stay with that, because as you indicated, Mary, when we talked before with all of the candidates, the economy was in a pretty good place. The stock market was doing well. Local governments were in pretty good shape, and things looked rosy going forward. 6 weeks later, the world has turned upside down, as we said the other day with another guest. I think this will go down, Mark, almost in the way that 9/11 did, that there's a pre-9/11 world and a post-9/11 world. I think it's pretty clear there's going to be a pre-COVID world and a post-COVID world. So that when, if you're the one that's standing on November the 3rd and you're the next mayor of Baltimore, it seems to me you face a dual financial situation, one of significantly reduced revenue on the government side, impacting services, and then the challenge to help small business particularly get back up and running in Baltimore City. Can you tell us how a Miller administration will address those challenges?
Yes. First of all, I will go after every single federal dollar that's out there through various pieces of legislation and assistance that the Federal Reserve is providing right now to help cities stabilize their budgets. We should be taking advantage of every tool that's there to help get through this period. So that requires a lot of muscle on, you know, intergovernmental aid and making sure that Baltimore's right in line for everything that's on the table. Secondly, I think we could be doing more with our rainy day fund, which is our budget stabilization reserve. It's a fund the city has accumulated over years for a storm, and I think it's raining now. I think that could be helpful in providing some bridge loan assistance to small businesses in the city to help them get through a quarter, perhaps, of very low to no revenues.
Does that affect bond ratings to do that?
Pardon?
Does that affect bonds at all? When we've talked in the past about that money, that rainy day fund, why hasn't that been gone to before? Does that affect things for the city to be able to borrow money?
I don't think so. I think that it is there for a reason, which is to be used to help stabilize the city's budget when you go into a downturn like this. So I think that if it's used judiciously, and I'm not saying take down every dollar in that, but I think that you can use it to plug some holes. And I think that you can use it also as bridge financing before the federal dollars arrive if you're eligible for federal support for COVID-19 related expenses, if you're eligible for replacing some expenditures that you would have to make anyway. So I just think we could be a little bit more creative about how to use this budget stabilization reserve, and also how we can reach out to partners to help match funds that the city might put out there. I've seen other cities do this effectively where they've used some of their own reserves and then they've attracted philanthropy, they've attracted the private sector to help build a loan fund of scale. So I'm worried that when we turn the lights back on in Baltimore, we will have lost a significant number of small businesses. We should be doing everything we can right now to avoid that fate, because those are the jobs, that's the tax base that we're going to have to get back. So I think the next mayor has got to have a pretty strong economic development plan to address all of this.
Well, there's no doubt. I mean, the latest plans, and Nestor, when you used to live in the sports world, you know, you'd be talking about this nonstop. But the latest plans that I've seen from Major League Baseball, and the jury is still out on the NFL, but it certainly looks like baseball, if it does return at all, will be returning at least for a period of time to be played before no fans, which has tremendous impact to all of those businesses in and around the harbor and in and around Camden Yards. So the ability, Mary, to manage this fiscal crisis seems to me to be paramount. What do you take away from your experience? President Obama put you in charge of economic recovery for the nation coming out of the last financial crisis that we had as a nation. What do you take from that that you think is going to help you should you become the mayor?
Well, first of all, it wasn't just me. There was a great team of people working on that big, big project. But I think that what I take away from that is I always talk about three things. One, I think you have to be pretty bold in your vision and your thinking, and make sure that you're doing things at scale so your responses aren't so small that they don't work. I think you have to be pretty decisive and move quickly because time is not on your side with things like this. And finally, I think you have to make it easy. You know, we can design programs that are so complex, nobody can navigate them or access them. And I think we've seen that in the last month with small businesses struggling to get into the Paycheck Protection Program that the CARES Act created. There were winners and losers and people who just, you know, couldn't seem to access the funding. So I think keep it simple, keep it, you know, at scale, and be quick. I think those are the three characteristics of a winning solution that I found in my time in the government. It's very hard for a government to move quickly, but sometimes you have to.
How are you, I guess now you sort of have to jump back to the campaign side of it and look at the issues that are being raised, because they will, I guess, affect governance. And one of the things that recently has surfaced is that some of your critics would say that Mary's trying to buy the election. She's coming in with a lot of money and trying to buy it on the airwaves, and that she's someone who really hasn't connected to Baltimore neighborhoods before, and we don't know her. I'm sure that comes up in virtual town halls or others. You hear it from your critics. What's your response to that? That you're sort of the new kid on the block. That you're Johnny come lately to Baltimore, and you're trying to buy the election. What do you say to folks who say that?
Well, I say I've lived in the city for 34 years. I've been involved in so many community organizations and so many projects in Baltimore. I may be a political outsider to the system, which I actually think is useful right now, but I'm not an outsider to the city of Baltimore and our needs. I have put in my own money in this campaign because I came in without a war chest and a deep need to raise name recognition and make sure voters across the city knew about me. But we've also done a significant amount of fundraising, and we found a great deal of support for the candidacy. We reported last week that we'd raised over $725,000 from supporters in this race. But what I say to people is this is my personal commitment to Baltimore. I love the city. I'm willing to put my own funds in here to make this a strong, you know, candidacy, a good race where we have a fighting chance to be elected because people know who I am and they know what my message is. I've also said, you know, as mayor, this would be my full-time job. I will have no outside business dealings. I won't even take a salary. I am just here to serve Baltimore. And so I hope people see that for what it is. I think putting in my own funds also makes me more independent. You know, I don't have any, you know, I'm not beholden to anyone. I've made a big commitment here myself, but I want to make the best decisions for the city, and I want to be an independent thinker and someone who's going to come in with a fresh approach, style, perspective.
Obviously not having this COVID thing in mind, from a campaign standpoint, I think I joked with you. We were one of your first visits early in the year at Fadley's, and I said you'll be shaking hands and kissing babies, and you'll be doing neither of the kind leading up, not being able to press flesh, not being able to walk around, not being able to be at the farmer's market on a Sunday. My wife and I are over there for vegetables. I would think that it's been a very different kind of campaign than maybe what you envisioned in that way. Helpful, hindering, and you know, we talk about these virtual town halls. It's nice, but it's not the same as walking around east and west and north and south Baltimore, right?
Absolutely the case. This is not the campaign that I imagined. We've had to pivot very quickly to a virtual campaign style that's doing, you know, town halls where people, you know, are virtually joining. It's doing lots of meet and greets on Zoom meetings, lots of phone calls. But it also is the reason why it's so important to be able to do media now, to be able to do television ads and radio, print advertising, because that's the way we just keep gaining momentum, is just getting the message out. So, you know, that's not a small endeavor to do that, but that's what we're going to do all the way to June 2nd.
Mary Miller is our guest. She is at electmarymiller.com. All the issues up here, making Baltimore safe, strengthening the education system, all of the tabs here. One tab for you and working with President Obama is leadership. And I think we've all seen this. We talked in the very early part of this is how this was going to go. I don't think any of us were even wearing masks at that point, maybe staying home. It was the first couple of days of COVID as I remember it. Now we're out on this and we've had a full dose, 2 months of Larry Hogan at 11 in the morning, various Cuomos at noon and 10 on CNN and Pritzkers and Newsoms and others. And then we've had the President of the United States every evening. I have not heard you speak out about this. I'd love to hear some of what you think of, I don't know, injecting bleach and different things like that that we've learned in the last few weeks.
I'm not even going there on the air. I think that's been fully vetted. I do think our governor has done a good job of getting Maryland ahead of the curve on, you know, the social distancing and putting in place, you know, medical directives that are they're hard. You know, it is no question hard. But I think he's already beginning to talk about what we should be looking for to reopen, you know, the economy, the city, the state, and what the metrics will be. So I think he's done a great job of communicating on this, and I give him high marks for that.
Well, Mary, in addition to crime, and you've talked extensively about crime in previous interviews with us. We've touched on it in this one. But in addition to crime, other issues that continue to come up in Baltimore, and they come up, it seems like they come up decade after decade, and they're related to transportation, and they're pertaining to affordable housing. Can you talk a little bit about the Miller administration and what it would do to really try to improve this lousy transportation system, there's no other way to describe it, that we have in Baltimore City, and the need for more affordable housing.
Sure. On the first one, we're actually going to do a town hall on transportation on Thursday night this week to take questions from voters on that topic. But I've stepped out a little bit and said, look, I just think the city's going to have to take more control of public transportation. I think we should really consider a regional transportation authority that is Baltimore and the immediate surrounding counties. Transportation doesn't stop at the city borders. We've got people working in the city and in the counties, but we should have a much stronger local voice in designing a public transportation system that works better for this city. We did not get the red line. I say right now we should be focused on making bus service much more reliable. I think that we need to make the city safer for pedestrians and bicyclists. There's a good plan called Complete Streets that the city council has been working on. That is not finished, but I would welcome seeing that. I think we could make the city more hospitable to bicyclists and pedestrians. But again, it comes back to the city taking more control, our Department of Transportation taking more control to say, how can we make this work better? Because transportation is one of the biggest obstacles for people getting out of poverty. If you can't get to a job, if you can't get your kids to the schools you want to go to, that is a big obstacle to improving your lot in life. And we need to do a much better job on transportation. So I'm eager to talk about that more, but I think that we could do a lot more at the city level. We could create more, you know, bus lanes. We could create rapid bus service going east-west by dedicating some streets and lanes to just bus service. I think there's a lot we could do to make it work better. But the most important thing is just standing up and saying, all right, we're going to own this issue in Baltimore.
Mary, you know, it's interesting. Nestor, before you get on to affordable housing, and I'm not going to ask you to commit to this idea, but when you're talking about a fresh look at transportation, Nestor and I spent almost an hour last week talking with Ron Cassie of Baltimore Magazine. That interview will actually be posted for folks soon. And he wrote a lengthy article on fixing Baltimore in the Baltimore Magazine. And one of his suggestions was that we ought to take a real look at knocking down 83, as radical as that sounds, and creating a boulevard that in other cities has actually made transportation easier, more accessible, and actually help beautify and connect different parts of the city. So there certainly are ideas out there that people are putting forward.
Yeah. And if we get that big infrastructure bill from the federal government, we should take a look at that one. No, I have talked to several people who think that we need a different plan for 83.
No,
well, this is your background, right? At Chapel Hill, right? Like that, you went. This would be something where you would have some incredible ideas about where the road to nowhere goes, right?
Yeah, we could do the High Line over on the road to nowhere. That's been a huge success in New York City. So let's dream a little bit about what we can do with some of these projects.
Yeah, I think the dreaming part. Well, speaking of dreaming, what do we dream in terms of affordable housing? It's not just a Baltimore issue. It's an issue all across the nation. How do we begin to make some progress so that 30, 40 years from now, we're still not talking about this issue, Mary?
Yeah. So to me, there's just a huge disconnect between our vacant housing units in Baltimore and our affordable housing needs. That's what I think we could close. If we came at this with much more scale to say, we're going to crack the code of how to take vacant housing, put enough money into them to renovate them to a price that is affordable for either rental or home ownership in the city, and we're going to do that at scale. We have not made any meaningful progress on the number of units in Baltimore. Every year we fix a few more come on the rolls as vacant. This is a big problem in Baltimore, and I think this is what the next mayor should really take on and say, we're not going to do a few dozen or hundreds, we're going to do thousands. And we're going to do that at scale, and we're going to figure out the financial model to do that, get the private sector to work with us, get the community associations to work with us. But I would be so excited about really changing the dynamic of housing needs in Baltimore. And I do believe this can be done. You know, Baltimore is a relatively affordable city compared to the San Franciscos, the Seattles, the New Yorks of the world. we can make that happen here. I worked on some of these problems in Detroit when I was at the Treasury. That city was in bankruptcy. They had 80,000 vacant housing units to deal with. And we worked specifically on helping them figure out how to reinvent a housing market in that city. And that's what I'd like to do in Baltimore.
Mary, the dollar housing that Governor Schaefer did and then Mayor Schaefer many, many moons ago, that was also brought up in the BMAG piece last week. You talk about Detroit. What did you learn? What lessons are there that we don't have to go to bankruptcy? Because some say we will go to bankruptcy, right, no matter who the mayor is. What lessons were learned there to employ here a decade later? Because certainly there's been success there. And I always hear about the private sector and Dan Gilbert coming in and buying a chunk of it and investing in it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that we have a very backed up court system in Baltimore to move houses out of receivership into new ownership hands. But think about how much money is lost in Baltimore in property taxes from vacant houses that have very little value today. If we can accept the fact that we're going to have to sell them at relatively low prices to allow a developer to fix them up and put them back on the market at an affordable price, think about what the property tax revenues will be in the future that the city could benefit from. So we're giving up a lot right now by allowing this sort of status to exist, and I think that we need to do the economics on this differently to think about the future benefit of getting these houses back in property owner hands.
I know we talked a lot the first time we got together, then the second time. Now, the aerial surveillance, it's something I think we touched on briefly the first time around. It was more of a concept around a whole bunch of other things we were talking about in the news now. And Don and I have gone back and forth with this with a number of candidates, a number of citizens, quite frankly. It's very popular amongst us in the city. Apparently, we talked to Patrick Gonzalez about pollsters and talking about how popular this would be. Where do you stand on that? And then maybe even 3 months, 4 months now into a candidacy, where are you with Police Chief Michael Harrison and crime in general, what maybe you've learned about this over the last 90 days?
So I do support a pilot program to test aerial surveillance. I appreciate all the arguments people are making on the privacy side, and I think we have to have appropriate safeguards. But if this proved to save lives in Baltimore, I think it would be well worth conducting the pilot and seeing whether it is, in fact, effective in reducing violent crime in Baltimore. So I have supported that. I have not wavered in my support for Michael Harrison as the police commissioner. I continue to say we can't have more turnover in that job. We do need to give him the resources and support from elected leaders to be successful in his job. I think that COVID-19 has created a whole host of new issues in terms of demands on first responders, in terms of the delays in some of the work they're doing on the consent decree. I appreciate all of that, but I don't want to move away from the urgency of reducing violent crime in Baltimore and having a mayor who's going to work with the police commissioner and every other party to get our crime rates down. And I think it is a leadership issue, I think it's a management issue, and I think it is an urgent issue. I haven't seen that kind of convening and focus on violent crime that we're bringing to COVID-19, and that's what I think we need to do.
Mary, and you've been very gracious with your time. I know you have a busy schedule, but I do think, and Nestor continues to come back to it, because it is the number one issue. We chatted with former mayor and president of University of Baltimore, Kurt Schmoke, the other day, and he said, look, all the way back to when I was mayor, I would tell anybody who's running, it's crime and grime. It's crime and grime. You take care of the crime and you make the city clean, you will have done a pretty good job as mayor. Having said that, convince the people who are listening right now that Mary Miller can get the daggone guns off the street. What do we have to do to get guns off the street?
We need to work very hard with the federal agencies here, because I think gun trafficking is a bigger issue than Baltimore alone. I mean, we really do need to work with the U.S. Attorney's Office, with, you know, the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms. We need to bring particularly the federal agencies into play here. That's another piece of this puzzle in Baltimore, of getting every single party working together for the same goals. So So that would be one of my responses to that question.
So, Mary, close the deal for us. We've got roughly 1 month to go. We're going to be voting by mail. We don't know how many people are going to be voting. It's going to be a very, very close election by all accounts. Any one of four or five folks could win. It's going to be within a couple of percentage points. For all the folks listening now who are going to be sharing this on social media, telling their friends, hey, listen, why should Mary Miller be the next mayor?
I think you want someone with the heart and passion for the city, but also someone with the management experience, the public policy experience, the financial experience to take us through what will be a very challenging period, but to also take the city in a new direction. I always say we don't just have a crime problem, we have an opportunity problem. And we need someone who is going to materially change the trajectory of this city by moving people up in Baltimore and giving people more opportunities. And that's what I'm eager to do as mayor of Baltimore.
Mary, always good to get together with you. I hope we chat again soon. And, you know, I will make the Trump question a little different next time so I don't get caught. Before I let you go, you know, I'm a voter. I'm going to vote for one of you. I'm passionate about the Trump issue and sidestepping it. He's the president of the United States. You may have to work with him if you're the mayor. You might not have to. You have anything? I did ask you the question. I want to give you a chance to, because I don't see you tweeting about it or talking about it. At 6 o'clock every night, Don and I are losing our minds.
Well, I would say I am very proud to have worked for Barack Obama as an excellent president of the United States. I will also say that I've been in positions where I've had to work across political parties and work with people of very different backgrounds with different stakes in the game, and I'm someone who can do that. I will say that, again, you know, I think that I had the opportunity to work for a great leader of our country.
There you go. All right. You say enough by saying nothing, but, you know, we're all in it together. So
we really do appreciate you
coming by. You can go to electmarymiller.com. All the issues there, inclusive growth, strengthening the education system, ending Baltimore's health inequities, all of that. And we've talked to Mary at length in two other occasions out of Baltimore Positive. Don, are we done with Mary? We're moving on?
I think it's been an outstanding session. Mary, again, like I said to the other candidates, anyone who steps up, puts their hat in a public arena, subjects themselves to all of the things that entail. We should thank all of you for being willing to run. This is an important election. Baltimore City needs a great leader, and we ask people to get involved and vote.
Terrific. Thank you guys so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Mary Miller, candidate for mayor. You can find her as well as all of them. And if you live in the city, if you live in the county, register to vote. Please do that. And American right, we want to make sure everybody's taking advantage of that. And we've been sharing all sorts of links to register to vote. And if you are registered to vote, be on the lookout for that envelope coming this month. Make sure you get those in on June 2nd. We need great leadership in the city. That's what it's all about. That's why Don Mohler and I have gotten together along with our friends at State Fair and Fadley's and Mohler and Gary. And we bring you these Baltimore Positive conversations with the former Baltimore County Executive Don Mohler and I, so we certainly appreciate that. Make sure you're subscribing. All the mayor candidates joining us here this week, instead of the forum we had planned all in one day down at City Garage in Baltimore on April 14th. We've moved the election, so we've moved this format to just ask questions individually, and we appreciate all of the mayor candidates for coming along this week, playing along in conjunction with a bunch of education leaders from last week. So we're mixing and mingling all that we're doing here, as well as the arts during COVID. I am Nestor. We are WNST.net, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. Keeping calm, staying local, dressing up, and staying Baltimore positive.